The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvin Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. I want to talk today about the departments that get in the way of your life. These are departments that your taxes pay for, but are used to make your life worse. And we're going to talk about how we can think about either reducing some of them or even eliminating some of them. With me first is Anthony D'Orazio. He's running for Congress in New York's 25th Congressional District. That's Rochester and the surrounding areas. His website is TonyDorazioForNY.org. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about education. Let's talk about the Department of Education. If you're elected to Congress, what will your priorities be when it comes to the Department of Education?
My priorities when it comes to the Department of Education is anytime I get a chance, I will propose its elimination. I will introduce legislation to propose the elimination of the federal Department of Education. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most blatantly unconstitutional departments in the federal government. It's a blatant grab of states' power. Education is not a power that's enumerated in the Constitution to the federal government.
Let me ask this. Let's say you're a parent, you have students in school. Isn't eliminating the Department of Education, I mean, how is that going to impact people who have kids in school right now?
Well, hopefully positively. By returning powers to the states and taking away from the federal government. So think about it. Let's think about what happens now. The Department of Education, it's funded by our tax dollars. It's funded by income taxes. It's funded by state departments of education and state taxes that are funneled into programs that the Federal Department of Education hosts. And that money kind of gets funneled back to the states, but what people don't think of when these big departments are established, and I'm sure that whoever established the Department of Education, whoever came up with the idea, had great intentions. They say about the road to hell. The problem is federal programs generally cost a lot more than people think. Mm-hmm. We're talking north of $13 billion in the 80s, and now we're up hovering around $80 billion in federal education budget. That's money that's being taken from the states that could be used to educate children, and instead are paying for a bureaucratic overhead.
One of the things that a lot of people have been asking about is programs like Common Core. You know, how would ending the Federal Department of Education relate to the adoption of Common Core?
Well, I say why does there even need to be a Common Core? Now personally, I don't have a gigantic issue with Common Core as it stands. I mean, mm-hmm. It's good that we are teaching our kids core things, some standard things. The problem is hasn't been Common Core itself. It's been the implementation of Common Core, and we've seen ridiculous examples and memes, and those are always extreme examples, but it's not something that the federal government should have ever done to begin with. This is what states are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Now, one question I've gotten is, well, what if there's a state that wants to teach that creationism is the only way? Well, that falls into other constitutional violations. Governments at any level really can't violate the Constitution. They can't violate the separation of church and state. They can't teach something that's blatantly false. But I think we're mandating a federal department to force something on people who don't really need something forced on them. I think we're mandating policing of our curriculums when, really, teachers are pretty smart. They're pretty good at teaching, at mandating their own curriculums.
And, you know, what's especially interesting is we now actually can see what the free market for education would look like, because you have so many more decision makers. Specifically, we have a large, large number of Americans in doing homeschool now. It's in the millions.
And we do.
And what's interesting is curricula have to compete for their dollars. Like, each person is going to buy a curriculum for their child, or they might write their own curriculum, whatever. But the point is, as far as I know, very, very few, if any, homeschoolers have chosen to buy Common Core. In other words, they might have things that have certain similarities, but they're not buying that for the simple reason that it's just, you know, there's better options out there. You know, before we run out of time, I actually want to talk a little bit about a different area. Specifically, I want to talk about the area of crime, justice, policing, and what you would do if you're elected about that specific area.
I am all about one of my biggest issues, and an issue I see in my district every day, and I hate to be that guy who says it, but I especially see it as I drive around the city of Rochester, which is a very urban population. And not necessarily the federal government doing this, but I see over-policing focused in areas that we don't need to be focusing in. This becomes especially apparent at the federal level. I swear, for every government agency, there's a police or some sort of a law enforcement arm to them. The Department of Ed, which we were just talking about, mm-hmm. They have an office of the Inspector General. They're there just to police schools. Of course, eliminating the Department of Ed would get rid of the office of the Inspector General. But every agency has their own individual police force, and that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The DOJ has at least 7 of them. You've got the ATF, which I love Austin Peters' line that should be a retail store, not a police agency. The Drug Enforcement Agency, of course, perpetuating our drug war. The FBI, but even the FBI, which is a law enforcement agency, has the FBI police as a law enforcement agency inside the law enforcement agency. There's a lot of redundancy in government, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. It would be extremely simple to winnow down some of these agencies. We don't need the United States Marshal Service and the FBI under 2 separate umbrellas. They cross jurisdictions an awful lot. Why do we need 2 departments to do the same work?
And the interesting thing is, it's not that they like it. It's not like they're super happy when there's these jurisdictional conflicts. It's something that even they don't like.
No, they get really angry about it. And we've all seen Law and Order. I'm gonna go to this, and I know it's kind of a ridiculous example. And every time that they stumble upon a federal investigation, all of a sudden the feds come in, and it's all of a sudden hush hush, top secret, and they're the bad guys. The bad guys become the federal government. Now we are in a culture where pop culture sees the federal government, federal police agencies, as the big bad guys.
And there's so much to do. I want to ask a little bit before we run out of time.
Sure.
What proposals would you have? You know, if you're elected, what are some of the proposals that you would make? What type of legislation would you sponsor on these? On these particular issues,
one of my proposals is an audit of every single cabinet level department to find these redundancies, to find ways that we can just skim the fat right off the top. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a really easy way to get us to an elimination of the income tax. I know we're not going to do it overnight. We didn't build this federal government in a day. We can't whack it all down in a day. But we can certainly start working towards it, and nobody in Washington is doing that. Getting rid of some of the federal-level victimless laws, the one that we frequently bring up is, of course, the war on drugs, descheduling drugs. Even if we have to take the compromise, even if you just look at the compromise position of marijuana, just removing marijuana possession, people who have been arrested for marijuana possession would have a significant impact on prisons. Now take that back a step further to anyone who's committed nonviolent drug possession crimes. Take that out of the prisons, and you've made a dramatic impact on your society. Dramatic. Those are some of my big issues.
That makes a huge amount of sense. Now, before we run out of time, one more thing. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, what website should they go to?
Well, my website is tony4ny.org, or you can hit up my Facebook page, which is Tony D'Orazio for Congress.
Awesome. Tony, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Guys, I just finished talking with Tony D'Orazio. He's running for U.S. Congress in New York's 25th District. You've heard him say exactly how he's going to approach government. He's going to reduce it to make your life better. Now, here's the thing. If we had 10,000 people like Tony D'Orazio, that would be excellent. And you know what? We do, but a lot of you guys just are feeling a little nervous about running for office. Listen, 2016, the election cycle is almost wrapping up, but you can still get involved in existing campaigns. But 2018 and 2017 are just around the corner. Please go to lp.org/states and find how you can get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state or run for office in your state. Think about the amazing coverage you're going to bring to the cause of liberty. Think about how every time some Democrat says that the only option is the Republican, or some Republican says the only option is the Democrat, you can say, listen, there's this other guy here or this other woman over here who's going to cut government, who's going to get rid of all these things that we hate. Consider them. And if you're ready to do that, your first step, go to lp.org and see how to get involved in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
We're going to be in a second. Yeah, well, and now we are. Guys, welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. With me right now is Sissy Spraggan. She is running for governor in Missouri. And there are so many different areas that we want to talk about, but the most important is going to actually be the biggest piece of the state budget, or one of the biggest pieces of the state budget. Sissy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Arvind.
Now, let me ask you this. When you consider the state budget right now, what are some of the areas that you want to target? What are some of the areas that you want to see reduced or eliminated or downsized right now?
Well, education is a huge one with regard to the state budget, because there's a massive amount of money from the state budget that supports a massive state-level bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't include actually the local part of the budget, which is almost as big, which is supported primarily by property taxes. Mm-hmm. So at the state level, there are almost 2,000 employees in the Missouri Department of Education, and these people aren't teachers. They're basically bureaucrats and mm-hmm. administrative people.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why they're there. I guess they're there to sort of enforce a bunch of testing guidelines and enforce federal programs and push paper and move dollars around and, sort of monitor schools, at, you know, local level schools at the state level and mm-hmm. yada, yada. So there's a large bureaucracy at the state level that is not actually involved in teaching anybody. And so the total amount of money that's being consumed in Missouri for K-12 education is about $9.5 billion, and $5.5 billion of that comes from the state. Some of that, a billion of that, is federal money that mostly goes to the school lunch program, and then you've got state-level sources for the rest of the $5.5 billion. And then there's $4 billion that comes from property taxes, which are obviously at the local level. So if you think about getting rid of the state-level bureaucracy, you can exclude a huge amount of costs. It's basically costing about $10,000 per student, and overall it's not working out very well. As we know, those costs have gone up dramatically mm-hmm. over the last 30 years. Most of that increase has been in administrative costs and costs for administrators who seem to be pretty well paid. And also for all this standardized testing and all of this whole centralization and, you know, enforcing federal regulations, which from my perspective we should basically just opt out of. And yes, I guess we would lose the federal money, but I think it would be worth the trade-off to opt out of those federal requirements on education.
Now there's a couple things I want to bring up here. The first is, I think it's useful for the listeners to know that you yourself actually have a pretty impressive educational background. I mean, you're not coming at this from somebody who, like, you know, doesn't really get math or doesn't really, like, you know how to read or something like that. I mean, you know, let's tell the listeners, like, a little bit about your own educational background.
Well, I have a bachelor's degree in chemistry. I grew up in Tennessee on a farm, and I got a bachelor's degree in chemistry from the University of Tennessee. And then I went to the University of Wisconsin, Madison, for graduate school, and I got a master's in, two master's actually, one in chemistry and one in physics, and then I got a PhD in physics. So I've mm-hmm. kind of over-educated.
I mean, and the reason that I bring this up is I'm going to give 10-1 odds that you have more understanding of, you know, math and science than, let's say, at least 90, if not 100% of the, you know, people who are doing a lot of these administrative functions.
And, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, and what's especially important about that is this: I would also bet that there's quite a few people in the state that also have a better understanding of math and can actually make their own decisions. You know, if a school isn't working, there are many other options nowadays other than a school. Missouri especially is very easy to switch to home. It's one of the easiest states in the country to switch to homeschooling. There's a lot of options. So you don't really need somebody at the top overseeing it. Every single parent and family is already its own overseer. And if a bunch of people start leaving the schools will probably get the message.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what are the ways, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, restructuring this, you know, what would you start with straight up just downsizing, eliminating? What would be some of the things that you would want to put on the table there?
Again, it's the state level bureaucracy that we would target first. Mm-hmm. If we can opt out of a lot of these programs, and Missouri has state level sort of programs and, you know, standards and things that they enforce onto the local schools, if we can basically opt out of the federal side and really work on the state bureaucracy first, because mm-hmm. we still have local school systems and they're still using lots of money that they collect from property taxes. So it's mm-hmm. not like getting rid of the state part would actually just make, you know, would mean they didn't have any funding overnight. So I think if we just really work on the bureaucracy and return the schools to local control, and again, they are deriving a large chunk of funding, which is most of the funding that's actually paying for, you know, for teachers and whatnot from the local level, then, you know, you could basically make a large part of progress there at the state level, because I would like to eliminate the state income tax. So you obviously have to say, okay, what are you going to not spend in order to eliminate the state income tax, because that's obviously going to help the state and help the situation for jobs in the state. And, you know, you've got to offset that revenue. So in my mind, that's a good trade-off, because it's highly questionable what we're actually gaining from the education spend, you know, overall to a large extent, but certainly for a state level bureaucracy that's kind of enforcing federal level mandates and state level mandates and all these things on local schools.
One of the really nice things about that is in a lot of ways you're actually getting two things at the same time. One, you're getting a tax break. I mean, that's kind of nice. You know, you're paying, you have a lower amount of state taxes that you would need to pay. But there's a second piece of it, which is really nice, which is your actual school quality is no longer being restricted by the not super competent oversight of the state. I mean, you're really talking about improving the actual experience at a lower cost in many ways.
Exactly. And as you pointed out, there's a lot of other ways to get education. I mean, technology has brought us a huge number of options with regard to learning things, which is awesome. You know, I mean, I learn things every day without going to a school. You know, it's pretty cool. So you do have all these options. As you pointed out, Missouri is a straightforward state if you want to homeschool, if you choose to do that. And, you know, people do a combination of using a lot of the, you know, technology options that are out there to help with homeschooling and that type of thing. You could have parents obviously working together. I know a lot of people that do that, where they have, you know, groups of homeschooling parents will pool up to, you know, bring in teachers or, you know, procure materials and things like that. So they kind of create many schools that are, in fact, controlled by parents, which, maybe that's a good idea, you know. And then it also eliminates the whole fighting about what are we going to teach in school. That way everybody can have their kids learn the stuff that they want them to learn and not have to enforce one size fits all on everybody and waste a lot of breath arguing about, you know, moral points that really have no place in government.
And you know, the... You know, having worked in the libertarian movement for a little bit now, I've seen so many great alternatives. And the number one thing I'm hearing from people is that this is a great alternative. I just wish my school wasn't taking up the whole day with nonsense so I could do it. And if anything, this type of a shift, I think, could be the beginning of you know, probably something pretty incredible. You know, something that begins with eliminating state bureaucracy that honestly, even the public school teachers don't like. I mean, nobody likes the state bureaucrats. Nobody's really enthralled with them. They're just accepting them because they're getting a federal bribe. If you do it, as you say, and just reject the federal bribe and reject the problems that it causes, you're really kind of getting the best of all possible worlds.
Yeah, I agree. And the federal bribe is not, I mean, it's $1 billion in addition to $3.5 billion that's being extracted from the state and $4 billion that's being extracted locally in the form of property taxes. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not a huge part. And obviously can be gotten rid of, and along with all the mandates and all the headaches that it causes.
Let me ask you this. If somebody wants to learn more about your specific campaign, if they want to follow your campaign, you know, learn about your positions and background, what's a good place for them to go?
Well, we have a website, which is alexbraggins.com, and I have a Facebook page, which is Sissy Spraggins for Governor, I think. It is Sissy Spraggins for Governor is the Facebook page.
And, you know, just before we run out of time, is that a place where people can look and actually see what you're proposing to do?
Yeah, there's position, there's issue points on the website. There's not as, I mean, Facebook is more kind of issue commentary on, you know, public events that come up and things that are going on. But on the website, I do have issues listed there, and they're considerably more fleshed out than what you would see on, I guess, a typical campaign website where you'd see two sentences.
Yeah, and the reason that I ask that is because I really want to draw that distinction. So many people just don't, their expectations for what people who are running for elected office are so low that they don't even expect them to say what they're going to do. In other words, they don't even hold potentially elected officials who are going to represent them, you know, sign or veto laws on their behalf. They don't hold them to the same standard that they would to someone who's coming to, you know, paint the fence of their house. And, you know, if somebody's coming to paint the fence, you at least want to know, you know, what color, what material, like, you know, what are you going to do? When are you going to do it? And I feel like if that's the level you're going to expect to have a house painted, or, you know, buy a T-shirt or anything like that, that's at the very least what you should expect from a candidate for governor or Congress or local office or anything like that. So I really appreciate the fact that you, so many of the Libertarian candidates, are doing exactly that.
Thank you.
So, guys, if you want to learn more about Sissy's campaign, go to elect Sissy Spraggins. Is that a .com or .org?
No, it's Alex Spraggins. It's just my last name.
AlexSpraggins.com. Okay, that's electspraggins.com. Now, if you want to get more involved in a Libertarian campaign in your state, you can do, you know, what Sissy's doing. Sissy, are you the former state chair in Missouri, right?
That's correct.
And so, I mean, you know, you as a state chair can let people know that if they want to get involved, they just contact the state chair and you guys will help out, right?
Yeah, you can contact the chair at chair@lpmo.org, or you can actually go to info@lpmo.org, which actually goes to a number of people around the state if you have an interest in helping out or volunteering.
Absolutely. Sissy, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
All right. Thanks a lot, Arvin.
Guys, we just finished talking with Sissy Spraggins. She is running for governor in Missouri. You've heard her talk about how she's going to make some serious cuts and how those cuts are actually going to improve your life. They're going to improve the school quality. They're going to improve school freedom. They're going to improve educational quality. They're going to make so many improvements to day-to-day life. If you want to see that happen across the country, please go to lp.org/states. Get involved in the Libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Bora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day, we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control, and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. One thing that you learn when you're involved in politics is you start to learn about all these different positions, a lot of which are actually quite important, and you don't realize how they actually connect in so many different ways to reducing government, to increasing freedom, to various other strategic goals. With me right now is Nathan Clemons. He is running for Secretary of State in Missouri. That's the same state that Sissy, who was our last guest, is from. We're going to talk a little bit about what that position is, and then what are some of the ways that it relates to government and to protecting individual rights. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So I have a couple questions. My first question is, you know, what does the Secretary of State do at the state level?
Well, the Secretary of State in Missouri, they have a little bit of a more interesting, effect on government. But they actually get to, the final say, if you will, of the kind of measures that would go on ballots for citizens to vote on. And they're also, they get to decide what issues are brought on the floor for the Congress of Missouri, of course, to discuss. So it's kind of a big deal, I guess, you know. not talking myself up, the position, of course, but it's an important decision, and it's definitely a position that someone can definitely have some pull in. Probably not nearly as much as Sissy, but, you know, the governor, of course, is going to have some extreme pull, and it's great. And, of course, you know, I totally support her campaign. I'm very, very excited what she's been able to do in her positions on the issues. It's very, very encouraging. But the Secretary of State is also an important position. My main focus is getting libertarians more represented. And it's not just in federal government, but, you know, state and local governments, of course, because that's where it all starts. You know, the ideas have to start somewhere, and people have to jump on. And I think just bringing a libertarian idea to a Secretary of State position in a specific state, I think would be a huge jump and a huge help in getting that done.
Now, walk me through that first thing that you talked about, because that was actually something I didn't know about, the way that the Secretary of State influences what goes before the legislature. Walk me through that a little bit.
Yeah, so what happens is, of course, in Missouri, the way to get something on the ballot is it has to be petitioned on. It has to go through a certain amount of signatures, and then it is sent to the government of Missouri. And then the Secretary of State is the last person that it goes to. So they get to decide after it's gone through the appropriate channels prior to them. They're the ones who get to decide if it goes on the ballot or not. So, of course, there is always – when I learned that about the Secretary of State position, because I was actually told that when I was first interested in running, I was thinking, you know, my goodness, couldn't someone just, you know, be extremely partisan, you know what I mean, and then say, well, we're only going to put things on the ballot that I think, you know, are, which, of course, you know, I'm sure it's happened in the past. Of course, it's not, no one's going to admit to doing that, but it gives a lot of power to one position, and I was kind of reluctant at that position because of that. You know, as a libertarian, I'm not really in favor of someone being able to, you know, kind of unilaterally at the very last minute decide what goes on the ballot for the citizens to vote on. But of course, it does have to go through the proper channels, and by the time it goes through the people before it would get to me, it does change a little bit than what the petition, you know, it clears up the language, you know, let people, well, I don't know, it's government, so it actually kind of fuddles up the language, but that's something that I can suggest as well as a change to make this a little bit more understandable to the voters. And in Missouri specifically, we have had, I mean, the last few elections that we have actually had, I mean, I'm only 22 years old, so I've only been able to vote in the 2012 election, but you know, when it comes up on ballot measures, the language, I don't know how it is in other states specifically, but in Missouri, it's extremely confusing sometimes. And it's for somebody, you know, I've loved politics since I was 15 years old, you know, researched all the issues, but even sometimes the language for me, you know, it's like a back and forth, like, do you not want to, you know, it's one of those things. And it's just, it's very, very difficult for people to know what they're getting when politicians do language like that. And of course they do it on purpose, you know, I mean, of course they do, you know. And even for people that are, you know, are diehard, you know, care about this country, are involved in every single thing they can, sometimes it's even hard for us to understand the language. So I think that's also a big part for Secretary of State. You know, when it gets to them, when they're the last line of, you know, does this go on the ballot, does this not, they can say, yes, this does go on the ballot, but let's try to clear up some of this language here so the voters can actually understand what they're going to support or what they're going to oppose, because that's what we want, you know, in the end. We want people to know, of course, what they're supporting or what they're opposing.
This, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because there's a trick, and I want to describe this trick because it's so common. Let's say you're working to repeal marijuana laws, all right? Mm-hmm. You put together a group of citizens puts together a thing, and some legislator, some political leader, some congressman, somebody says, listen, yeah, I'm going to take your volunteers and your money. I'm going to put this thing on the ballot, or they'll use their influence. I mean, I guess they single-handedly can't get it on a statewide ballot, but they'll use their influence. They'll endorse it. But in that process, they're going to change the language to make it incomprehensible to anybody. Mm-hmm. So in the first stage, they get all your donations and volunteer hours and all that. And then in the second stage, they make it so incomprehensible that no one can follow it. And then in the third stage, be like, listen, guys, I tried my best. This is the best I could do. That's BS. And the fact that there's someone there who's going to be like, listen, put this in English that a reasonable person can understand, and then I'll approve it, but not until then. That right there, I think, is an extremely important thing. The worst is, though, when they do the reverse of that, right? When they give you something unpleasant that's coded in a way that makes it sound pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm just like, okay, if we're going to put this on the ballot, we need to let people know what this really means. You know, we can't sit here and try to, you know, make it sound all perfect and whatnot. And it's just, it's very, people wonder why, well, libertarians probably don't wonder, but a lot of citizens who don't follow, I guess, the libertarian ideology, you know, wonder, you know, why can we never trust politicians? Well, it's because of stuff like that. I mean, you can't, like you said, I mean, they take all the money, they make it look like that they're on this side, and you know, we got this, and then the language is, you know, like, you know, what's going on here? You know, it's not that difficult, but of course it's politicians, it's government, so it's going to be made difficult, you know, when it's not supposed to be. And I think that's the problem with government, and I think that brings up a very interesting point. Someone asked me recently, you know, as a libertarian, why would you want to be involved in something that they said something that I hate so much, which that's not the word I don't think I would use, but something that I do have a lot of criticism and disdain for, because I've seen in the past, of course, how it ruins people's lives. You know, it ruins way more than it helps. Oh, my gosh. It's not even close. Look around the world, not just our country. But I told him, I said, that, you know, the reason I want to be involved in government is because I want to make sure that it stays small. I want to make sure that it stays there for what it is constitutionally obligated to do and nothing more. That's why. I don't want to get in there, you know, as a lifelong politician. You know, I don't want to get in there, you know, so I can make the big bucks and try to screw everybody over. And if I ever, you know, became like that, I would immediately drop out, because, you know, that I would rather hold firm in my positions and my values and lose every single election I run for then change my values or get bought by special interests and become the president of the United States. You know, I mean, it's just, that's the problem with our country, is it's too much money thrown into it. People waver from their original values and what they actually believe in. And me, along with, I guarantee every single libertarian, would pledge that we're not going to do that. Win or lose, we're not going to change what we believe, because that's how you change the country. You don't waver. You stay consistent.
And that is so fundamentally true. You know, people talk about that, you know, got to first kind of trick your way into office and then you can make a change. But the fact is, by the time you've worked to change yourself to be a tricky liar who's going to trick his way into office in the first place, you're not able to make that change. You are no longer philosophically or morally equipped to do, You know, the part of you that could make that change, it's gone. And that's why, you know, there's a lot of people who listen to the show that I know some of you guys are libertarians and some of you guys are on the fence and undecided. You know, should I go with the libertarian thing that I know is right, or should I try to kind of manipulate and trick my way through the other things? Listen, by the time you deform yourself that way, it's going to be too late. You're going to be not – it's going to be the battle will have been lost by that method. And we've seen that happen so many times. Now, Nathan, let me ask you this. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, if they want to follow you on Facebook, if they want to see what you're about, what's a good place for them to go?
Yeah, I put all my positions actually on speaking of Facebook, on my Facebook profile. I've, you know, updated it. I made it where it's not just, you know, commenting on stuff, you know, as it comes up and things like that. They can actually go to my bio on my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/NathanJackClemens37. And it has every single one of my issues in the bio. I stand on them, you know, I believe in them. I guess the good thing about me being, you know, young is people, you know, can't claim that I changed my positions because, you know, I just formed them 6 years ago. So, you know, not that I'm planning on changing, of course, but, you know, it's just, people always tell me that it's good that young people are getting involved, and I totally agree. But the problem is most young people tend to support the bigger government, you know, than you. So I try to do everything I can to keep people away from that and show them that, you know, the free market and freedom in general brings people prosperity more than the government ever can. So, facebook.com/NathanJackClemens37.
And I appreciate all the stuff that you're doing, Nathan. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Guys, we just finished talking with Nathan Clemens. Now, here's one thing, though, actually. Here's one thing that you guys should all keep in mind. Gary Johnson is polling, according to many of the major national polls, number one among millennials. And that means all this work that people like Nathan are putting in to read, to do outreach to younger voters, it's working. When somebody tells you that something can't be done, there's only two possibilities. One, they can't figure out a way to do it and figure that you can't figure out a way to do it either. Or two, they don't want you to figure out a way to do it. I always hear people from the RNC and DNC telling me all kinds of things that can't be done because, you know, I happen to live in D.C. We run into each other from time to time. They're always there to tell me what can't be done. But a lot of the things that they said can't be done, we've already done them. And so sometimes it's just what they don't want to be done. They don't want us to legalize drugs and shut down their special interest groups. They don't want us to be able to change the face of modern politics using the social media and the internet. They don't want things to happen. So they try to convince us that they can't happen. They don't want us to elect libertarians, but we've already been doing that across the country. It's in so many different states. Now, if you want to be involved in that process, if you want to be involved in showing the people that what they don't want to happen can actually happen just fine if we put the right organization and effort into it, please go to lp.org/states. And get involved in the libertarian campaign in your state. Right now you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
Being Here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss Being Here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. One of the funny tricks that federal departments like to use is they'll make a department that has one thing that's sort of useful, or even arguably, depending on your political views, even essential. One thing in there that's kind of good, and about 950 things that are totally useless. And so with me right now is Rob Lapham. He's running for Congress in Florida. And we're going to talk about ways in which we can eliminate, if not the entire department, but actually target parts within different departments to scale them down instead of by 100%, maybe by 99%, maybe 98%. Let's figure it out. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, Arvin, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good, and I'm really excited to talk about this idea of targeting agencies. First, explain what is the difference between a department and an agency? What are those two things?
Well, there are, unless the numbers change recently, we have 15 federal executive departments. That is an organization that is headed by a cabinet secretary. So he or she sits around the big table with the president. So that's the top-level organization. And then within a department, there are any number of agencies. For example, the Department of Justice. We all know Loretta, Attorney General, and she heads Justice. Well, within Justice, there are 60 different agencies. And probably nobody listening will be familiar with just a very few of them. Maybe most of us will know the FBI and the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, mm-hmm. and maybe alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Now we have 57 more agencies. How many people do you suppose even know what they are, let alone the billions of dollars that they spend? So there you have it, Justice, and then any number of agencies under them. And the numbers of agencies by department varies quite a bit. Justice mm-hmm. is one of the... one of the larger number of agencies. Actually, Department of State has 64, but I'm looking at a sheet here. There are 37 agencies in agriculture, 12 in commerce. Let's see, education is 26 agencies, energy 31. So when you drill down or are talking about a particular department, there are typically dozens of agencies within that department.
Now, let's talk about. You know, what are some of the agencies? What are some of your favorite agencies to talk about eliminating? Like, what are some agencies we can just say get rid of this whole agency?
Well, I think the one I've spoken about most happens to be education because it's fairly new. It was split off from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare 36 years ago. And the reason I would get rid of it is they have spent $1.5 trillion over the 36 years, but our kids. Test scores, I'm talking about reading and math, has continued to drop in relation to other developed countries. And the question is, what is it that the Federal Department of Education is doing? Whatever they're doing, it hasn't been effective. Some point out to the fact that it costs you 15 cents in regulatory compliance for every 11 cents that you get. In other words, it's not a financial benefit to school districts. Other folks, very controversial on Common Core, the federally developed current standards mandate. So anyway, if the Department of Education were eliminated, there are some elements that need to go somewhere else. For example, that department manages the school districts overseas for all of the dependents of our military personnel. And if you consider that at any given time, military personnel are being transferred from pick a place, you know, Okinawa to say Stuttgart, Germany, and you want the kids to have a seamless transition in moving from one school to another. So that I think that's a valuable central coordinating function that they perform. And I would move that over to the Department of Defense until such time as we succeed in bringing back all of our 200,000-plus troops overseas, bring them all back on their dependents, then that goes away. But honestly, most departments have some valuable functions within them. That doesn't mean to say that a lot can't be removed and the functions consolidated with other agencies.
That's a nice point. Both of those are actually good points. And one is that if you just start like cherry picking agencies, it's pretty easy to start getting rid of a lot of them. And when you have duplicates, I mean, at that point, you can pretty much say, like, keep one or the other. You don't need both. What are some of those duplicates that we could just, reduce?
Well, energy is one of them. The Department of Energy spends currently about a quarter or almost a quarter of its budget, $9 billion a year for non-military research and subsidies. Mm-hmm. Well, there are six other agencies, federal agencies, that also pay out energy subsidies. Health and Human Services, Treasury, U.S. Department of Agriculture, Department of Interior, Department of Labor, and HUD. And I don't know how much overlap and duplication there is, but why do we have agencies in seven different departments handing out energy subsidies? You got to believe there's overlap, duplication, and waste. Another one is labor. And the Department of Labor, every year this decade, according to the budget numbers, they have been spending a bit over $3 billion on employment and training programs. And no one would disagree that there ought to be employment and training programs. But according to the General Accountability Office, they have, there are eight other federal agencies that are also spending money on employment and training programs. And for an estimated $20 billion all told, there are actually 46 more employment and training programs in other federal agencies besides labor. If labor is the lead agency, let's put it all in there. And how much money can we save there? Or better still, just block grant all of the $3 billion to the states. Allocate that out and let the states handle it.
Now, what's especially interesting to me is that some of the agencies we have some that are duplicates, we have some that are unnecessary, and we have some that are arguably just harmful. What are some of the agencies that you would say are actually just literally doing more harm than good?
Oh, boy. The function that does more harm than good, aside from excessive taxation, is regulation, Arvin, and it's rampant all over the place. And I'm not sure that it is there was one particular agency that is necessarily more harmful than the next. I mean, what happens here? And I think Congress is at fault more than any other segment of government, because a new piece of legislation, let's say it's initiated in the House and goes through working across the aisle or whatever might be necessary in order to get the necessary votes. And very often when this new bill is passed out of the House, it contains language in it which says, and the Secretary shall give effect or so shall promulgate such regulations as will give effect to the intent of this legislation. And right away, the Secretary of, pick one, transportation, for example. So a new transportation bill comes out and the Secretary of Transportation is given the authority, not only given the authority, mandated to promulgate regulations, because Congress hasn't delved into it sufficiently to decide what those regulations are, to examine the cost-benefit analysis on whether it makes sense to have regulations. So you end up with a bunch of bureaucrats, in this case in the Department of Transportation, many of which may have never had business experience, run their own small business, or had that kind of background, and they are paid by us taxpayers to sit there and write regulations. And that is damaging, and it's not limited to any one department. It's all over the place. If you're in business, depending what business you're in, you're regulated by more than one federal department in terms of being able to operate your business.
And that is extremely true. Now, before we run out of time, let me ask you this real quick. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, where should they go?
I would be delighted if they go to robforcongress.org. That's R-O-B-F-O-R. CONGRESS.ORG, and my campaign pledges are there, a donate page is there, heck, my phone number is there. I'd be delighted to discuss anything we've talked about today or any of the pledges with anyone who would choose to contact me.
Absolutely. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thanks, Irvin.
Guys, we just finished talking with Rob Lappin. He's running for Congress in Florida. you know the ways in which he's going to cut government. We're talking about major cuts, getting rid of the agencies that are doing damage, removing entire departments, really improving your life, reducing taxes, increasing freedom, improving businesses, increasing jobs. If you want to see that happen across the country, if you want to see that happening in your state, please go to lp.org and get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and